The fourth case this morning, United States v. Assailant. Ms. Quinn?
Yes. May it please the Court, Attorney Kathleen Quinn appearing on behalf of the appellant Anas Salem. Your Honors, we're back together now, and since the last time that we were together, the law hasn't changed, but the record and the facts in this case have been substantially developed. We now know with certainty that Carlos Lopez, the star witness against Anas Salem, most certainly was a participant in the homicide of Aiden Sotelo back in December of 2004. The district court, in denying my motion for a new trial for Mr. Salem, and the government, too, seemed to put some emphasis on the fact that at the hearing on the motion for a new trial, Mr. Lopez was not called as a witness. I did not call him as a witness to specifically question him about the Sotelo homicide. I believe that the nature of that homicide, the nature of the evidence, the Brady evidence implicating Mr. Lopez and his co-actors in that homicide, reveals on its own that it is valuable Brady evidence that from which the inference of Mr. Lopez's bias for the government at Mr. Salem's trial and at the time that he originally reported his claims about Mr. Salem, he was biased. I don't think, and I believe that the court in reviewing the testimony of Mr. Lopez at Mr. Salem's trial, he was a fella who wasn't about to admit to much knowledge about anything. He indicated that he had never seen a proffer letter. He wasn't aware of any of the guidelines pertaining to cooperation. He had never discussed with his very experienced attorney substantial assistance. He did not know any benefits that one could accrue from cooperating with the government. I cannot imagine that at a hearing on my motion for a new trial that Mr. Lopez would have suddenly broken down and admitted that, oh, yes, I have a bias for the government because they did not charge me with the Sotelo homicide. I continue to harbor a sense of gratitude and beholdenness to the government so that they don't charge me in the future. I believe the evidence as it is, the evidence that indicates by his own admission and by the admissions of his co-actors that he traveled within his gang territory with his gang brothers, he saw rival gang members in their territory, he admittedly went with his gang brothers to go get a gun to come back to revisit the gang rivals. He and his buddy Martinez leave a car and go in pursuit of the gang rivals, and then he, according to Martinez's statement, cocks a gun, gives it to Martinez, and Martinez shoots at the rival gang members, killing one of them. Lopez agrees and in his statement acknowledges that he ran with Martinez back to the car and then ultimately drove back to his own grandmother's house where they hid out, they hid the car, and they ultimately got rid of the gun. He was clearly a participant in the homicide. That is evidence that is unlike anything else that I was able to cross-examine Mr. Lopez about. He was charged in racketeering acts. None of them amounted to somebody ending up dead. And the evidence that was kept from the defense until Mr. Salem's sentencing is exactly the kind of evidence that would have been highly interesting to a jury.
What about racketeering acts 10 and 35? Didn't they allege conspiracy to murder rival gang members and 35 attempted murder along with other things?
Yes. I would indicate that conspiracy to kill rival gang members, as I just indicated, it didn't result in anybody actually dying. And the act of the attempt homicide, this is not in the record, but I can inform the court that the only indication of Lopez's involvement in that was his participation in a lineup. So it's extremely different from...
But the jury knew about those accusations against Lopez, didn't it?
They did know about the names of the crimes with which he was charged. I did not go into the details of those charges, and quite frankly, they were not as interesting. They weren't as meaty, not only in their results, but in his involvement. the facts surrounding those acts were nothing like the Sotelo homicide. They were vague, and obviously the end result was very, very different. Also, the initiation of the government's involvement with those acts is very different. Mr. Lopez was charged with those RICO acts. He was charged for those lesser crimes, lesser than homicide. He was not charged with a homicide. He got away with murder. That is a different situation that I think, to the common juror, would definitely, regardless of the government's view of whether they cut a deal with Mr. Lopez or not, or whether or not Lopez would admit that he perceived himself to be in a position of being indebted to the government or beholden to them to make sure that his status with them stayed the same, a jury would say, that doesn't smell right. That kind of evidence would be a game changer in this kind of a case where Mr. Lopez was the only witness claiming that Anas Salem had done the things for which he was convicted. That is, he was the only witness that put a gun in Mr. Salem's hand. He's the only one that testified about threats being made. He's the only one that testified about intimidation threats and the pistol whipping occurring. Only one. While there were side witnesses that corroborated places where they were, maybe the mood in the car, things like that, nobody else testified to the actual elements of the offenses for which Salem was convicted. And that's why this case is exactly the case that the Taglia court was referring to when they said that in some cases, when it's the uncorroborated testimony of a single witness, impeachment evidence that comes to light like it did in this case can warrant a new trial. And it should in this case. It absolutely should. The danger, if a new trial is not granted in this particular circumstance, is that such a denial of a new trial would amount to giving to the government the power to define Brady and Kyle's evidence not as impeachment evidence, but whether or not it was charged acts, whether or not it was evidence of charges that, according to the flavor of the day policy that the U.S. Attorney's Office is utilizing that day or month or that year or whatever, and which can be influenced by economics, it can be influenced by the staff at the U.S. Attorney's Office, you know, the numbers or the experience or whatever, that's going to dictate what Kyle's and Brady evidence needs to be turned over to the defense. That would be wrong. The court knows that. That's not what Kyle's and Brady stands for. I'm going to save the rest for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. Gordon Giampietro on behalf of the United States. I think there are really three issues that the court should focus on when analyzing whether Judge Adelman abused his discretion here on remand. Given the new evidence that came out that this court asked Judge Adelman to consider, we're really talking about the three debriefs and then also, of course, the proffers made by the government at the evidentiary hearing. And there are really three things I think the court has to focus on. One is the fact of the chronology in this case. When did the debrief take place? When were the charges brought? And then when did Mr. Lopez report the assault or the abduction by Mr. Salem? But the second thing you have to focus on, I think, is the fact that Mr. Lopez was not treated any differently than any of the other Latin kings with respect to his participation in a homicide. And then third, and I think this is a very important point, and that is this. It's important for purposes of understanding the bias analysis whether, in light of the Sotelo homicide, Mr. Lopez would have faced any greater punishment than he faced already on the five felonies that he was looking at in the RICO indictment. And so let me go with the first one there with respect to the chronology. We know Mr. Lopez debriefed on September 2nd of 2005, and he was then subsequently on September 27th charged with five different felonies in the RICO indictment. And as Your Honor pointed out, Judge Tinder, two of the predicate acts that he was accused of involved actual conspiracy to commit murder of rival gang members, that's Act 10, and then obviously the attempted murder, which was Act 35. And so for purposes of bias and impeachment, you have to say to yourself, you know, why is he making up a story about Mr. Salem after he's already been socked with five felonies by the government? He wouldn't be too grateful to the government. He's looking at multiple life sentences there. His exposure is multiple life sentences. So Judge Edelman was exactly right that now having a chronology of when the debrief took place prior to the indictment, there's really no basis to say Mr. Lopez was, you know, happy that he hadn't been charged in connection with the Sotelo murder. Secondly, and this is critical, the prosecutor in this case, Mr. Gonzalez, as he pointed out at the evidentiary hearing, Mr. Lopez was not the trigger man in this particular homicide. There were a number of homicides that took place by the Latin Kings in this case, and the government was consistent in not charging Mr. Lopez or any of the non-trigger men in connection with those homicides. And so you look at this and you say, well, what's Mr. Lopez's incentive to testify falsely against Mr. Salem with respect to the Sotelo murder? He had none. He was treated exactly the same as every other Latin King gang member. And the third, and I think this is a critical point, and that is, was he facing anything worse as a result of the Sotelo murder that he had, you know, admitted some involvement in? The answer is absolutely no. And I think this court's original opinion is it's very important to focus on this because I think it responds to something Ms. Quinn, I think, is wrongly focused on, and that is this. What is the proper use of this evidence? Okay? It's not to degrade Mr. Lopez's character. It's to determine whether he has a bias, whether he's trying to work off something, why he's lying about Salem in order to get out from under the Sotelo homicide. Well, the reality is, if he's facing life sentences on these other five charges, there's really no incentive for him to make up the story about Mr. Salem. And the notion in this court's first opinion that somehow death is different or murder is different, that's really focused in on the possible penalty that he was facing. It's not that murder is heinous. No doubt that's the case. But the bottom line is, if you start saying the jury should have heard particular facts about Mr. Lopez and his involvement in the Sotelo murder, you've gone down a road where you're actually getting into bad character evidence. You're not getting into bias and motive. That's not what this court's first opinion was about. It was about, we don't have a complete record as to whether Mr. Lopez, in exchange for his testimony against Mr. Salem, got a pass on the Sotelo murder, which would have been something worse than he was already facing. And so I think it's very dangerous to say the jury here should have heard evidence about the circumstances of the Sotelo homicide, because that really goes to character evidence. That really does suggest, you know, Mr. Lopez is not to be trusted because he was in close proximity to Benny Martinez when he killed Mr. Sotelo. And so the only proper use of this evidence would have been bias and motive, that somehow he was getting something with respect to the Sotelo murder by testifying against Mr. Salem. And the only way you can get there is if you say somehow he was facing something more for the Sotelo murder than he was already facing for the five felonies that he was looking at in the RICO indictment. And he wasn't. He wasn't. With respect to what may have been in Mr. Lopez's mind, we won't know that because he didn't take the stand at the evidentiary hearing. But I don't think it's important that he didn't take the stand because the evidence is clear based on the charging policies of the U.S. Attorney's Office. He didn't get any special treatment whatsoever for testifying against Mr. Salem. He testified as a victim. He testified he didn't expect to get any credit for his testimony against Mr. Salem, and there's no evidence that he did. And as a result, this court should not find that Judge Edelman was either irrational or arbitrary in determining that this additional evidence about the Sotelo murder really was not material. The jury didn't need to hear that because it didn't add anything in terms of bias and motive. No further questions?
Well, part of the problem is murder different, isn't that? Isn't that the ultimate question?
I think so, Judge, but I think if I read this court's first decision correctly, it's different if you're facing a penalty that's different from what you're already facing. Because otherwise, there's really no basis to say he's biased or motivated to testify falsely. He was facing the same life sentence for Sotelo, potentially, that he was facing for the other RICO predicates. So, if there are no further questions, I'll ask that the court affirm Judge Edelman.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Well, you have 2 minutes, Ms.
Thank you. Unless there was evidence that Mr. Lopez was aware of the charging policies of the U.S. Attorney's Office, and unless there was some record of him being aware of what the penalties are with these offenses, it is fair, as the court has already indicated in its first decision, to say murder is different. Murder is different in the eyes of society. And what, unlike...
Even in Wisconsin.
In fact, in Wisconsin, under our state laws, it's mandatory life. And this was a debrief that was given not only in the presence of Attorney Gonzalez, District Attorney John Chisholm was present as well from our state court system. It's completely that the inference is there that Mr. Lopez would think this is a different kind of debrief that I'm giving. It's common knowledge that people get more credit when you give information on homicides than when you give them on, you know, attempt homicides. It's not unreasonable to think that Mr. Lopez would be aware of that. Also, as far as the chronology goes, Mr. Lopez would never know when the decision was made for the charging of the Sotelo homicide because it's never been charged. Nobody's been charged, as I indicated in my reply brief. I thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.